Before we begin, the Differently Brained team acknowledge the traditional custodians of the lands on which we record, edit, and stream this podcast. We pay our respects to all First Nations peoples and their elders, past, present, and emerging. We extend that respect to all First Nations cultures and their ongoing connection to the lands, waterways, and communities. Now on with the show. Hello everyone, welcome to another episode of Differently Brained. It's like this podcast, right, where no brain is the same. I'm a person and my name is Lachlan Rutherford.
And I'm Cinta Dietrich. And today we are with Molly Socom. Molly broke into the San Francisco comedy scene in 2008, making a name for herself as an emerging comedian and MC. She made a move to New Zealand in 2014, being a four-time New Zealand International Comedy Festival performer, as well as performing in the Edinburgh Festival Fringe. Now, she is performing her new show, Short Fuse, at the Melbourne International Comedy Festival, which we can't wait to see, and we're stoked to have her on the show. Welcome, Molly.
Yay. Welcome. Thanks, guys. Thanks, all.
No, our pleasure.
Absolutely.
So, considering this is a podcast about mental health and neurodivergence, I think it's pertinent to ask what your situation is. You've got borderline personality disorder, yeah? Can you tell us a bit about that?
Oh, gosh. Borderline personality disorder. I mean, a lot's going on with that, right? It's a little bit of self-destructive behavior going on, extreme mood swings, you know, explosive anger issues. Mm-hmm. I laugh about it because I'm still learning about it. And also, I definitely fit that bill and those symptoms. And that's what also my show is a little bit focused on, right?
Right.
A lot about my anger management issues. And I've just recently gotten diagnosed with this last year.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, I'm 43 now, Lachlan. And I've
very
just...
Very late diagnosis.
Very late diagnosis, but it makes so much sense now, yeah. Right?
It's like with you, Jacinta, you have, I mean, not a 43-year-old diagnosis, but you were quite late in life when you got your autism diagnosis.
Yeah, well, I was lucky enough to have a cheeky coffee with Molly before the show. And yeah, we discussed that where, you know, I was 27 when I got my diagnosis, and generally that still counts as late diagnosed over here. But Molly's got 15 years of extra not knowing on top of that. It takes so long to get that understanding and then start, I don't know about you, but I looked back at a lot of things and went, oh, that's what this is, and piecing a bunch of stuff together once I had that better understanding. How did you know you wanted to go and seek a diagnosis or talk to someone about it?
I mean, a lot of, you know, my issues and trauma, it's very situational, obviously. And then I actually started talking to a therapist, and I was trying to find a really good therapist. You know, I've gone through four of them.
That's
about average, hey?
I was going to say, not out of the ballpark of what I think most people were.
Right, right. Yeah. And I found a therapist that I related to because she was Vietnamese, and a Vietnamese woman. And I said, okay, she's my person. Like, I needed somebody that knows our history and all that. I'm Cambodian, and she knows that about me. But she's very direct. But she's also very sweet and kind. And it was even difficult just talking to her about stuff, because the first few sessions, now I've had her for almost a year now.
Right.
And I talk to her every week.
Yeah.
And now we're kind of moving it to every other week now.
Mm-hmm. It's great when you find someone that, because I've had probably about four different psychologists, and some of them have been better than others, but the current one I'm with right now, I'm able to chat with about all array of things, and it will always eventually link back to why I'm there in the first place. Like, I could go off on a tangent about
it. Oh, yeah.
And it's like, it's such a comfortable environment as well. It's good. It's great when that happens.
Yeah. Well, it's weird because, you know, when that first session, you're like the perfect person. You don't want to show like I'm really good about, you know, making my therapist believe that I'm okay all the time. Right.
Yeah.
Until I'm not okay. And yeah. she sees the patterns. Yeah. Of course, she sees the patterns. And she's like, I know where this is going to go. And she says, you have all the qualities and characteristics of borderline personality disorder.
But that first session, you're absolutely right. You're in there being like, I don't need therapy. Look at how good I am.
Look at my life. Yeah. I mean, I'm killing it with the jokes. I'm throwing jokes at her. She thinks I'm the most hilarious person in like the world. She's like, this one's different. I like her, right?
It sounds like she got her own personal comedy show. She should have paid you.
Every session, I think, is a little comedy with me. But there were very intense moments. And how did I even seek therapy? You know what? I know there was something a little off about me, about being angry about little things. Mm. You know, I can go from 1, 0 to 10 in a second, you know, and, but it really has to be a really intense thing, most of the time, but mm-hmm. I've learned that, oh, there's just little things too, road rage, just dealing with my parents, stupid things my friends do. It could be, you know, it's a problem. And I normalize my behavior.
Yes.
All yeah. the time. I'm like, oh, everybody's like this. Or yeah. no, they're not. I'm somebody who just doesn't let things go easily.
Mm. Is it mostly anger that is the emotion that you get?
I think my mood changes a lot. And I've learned this a lot in relationships, of course. Yeah, some people talk about being in relationships where it's just hot, cold, hot, cold.
Yeah.
I'm that hot, cold person all right. the time. Right. You know, and it's funny because I do a little, you know, like McDonald's fries, hot, cold. We don't know. Whatever. You guys call it hot, you guys call it hot chips and Macca's, you know, whatever. I learned that. I researched, you guys. I researched Australia.
Excellent.
But yeah, that's I learned I was that person. And I know my faults. Very self-aware, right, Jacinta?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We did discuss that of being self-aware means knowing your problems, but not necessarily knowing or wanting to do yeah. the work to solve them.
I get exactly. that for sure. I get that with my bipolar disorder. It's like I know I am acutely aware of the fact that there are all these things that I could be doing to make things better for myself, but I don't fucking want to because it's better to be like this. It's easier, you know? But it's such a, well, I can't speak to borderline personality disorder, but it sounds kind of similar where like with bipolar, it's such a like a self-sabotaging kind of
yes.
illness. Yes,
very self-sabotaging behavior. I have very narcissistic traits, done my fair share of gaslighting. You know, mm-hmm. I'm usually the villain in mm-hmm. a lot of my relationships, unfortunately. But and I'm working through it, yeah. right? Yeah. You got to work through it, learning. I'm reflecting. And because of this recent diagnosis, an incident happened last year where I just decided, I was like, I'm done. I need to figure something out. But also the show that I'm doing is about what are the things that I am doing to, yeah. to fix some of this problem immediately, you know, and some of those things are, you know, little silly things.
Can you share some of those things without spoiling the content of the show?
You know, oh gosh, you know, if I say it, I don't want the expectation
yeah.
for me to talk only about that.
Sure.
A lot of my content about BPD is very little.
Yeah.
Okay. So I will introduce it that I have all these, you know, these symptoms of it, but that's not really the show, right? Yeah. You can see how I am through the show because of the childhood trauma, yeah. the generational trauma with my parents gone through as Cambodian refugees, mm. you know, us being refugees mm. in America. Yeah. And I'm very, but by the way, my accent is American accent is very American. I was a Cambodian refugee, but I was born in Thailand. I was not raised. I was raised in America.
Right.
And I just want to be very clear that everybody thinks I'm, you know, like, oh, fresh off the boat. but I don't speak fluent Khmer, which means Cambodian.
Okay.
It's very funny because I actually got asked to do a radio interview, but in Khmer.
Oh.
And I felt so embarrassed that I couldn't do it.
Yeah.
And if they said, oh, does she speak it a little bit? I said, I speak it a little bit. But it would be embarrassing. I would never come back to Australia.
No. So can you, without too many spoilers or anything, pitch us the show, Short Fuse?
Oh, my gosh. Okay. you know, I ran into somebody who said, oh, I gave a flyer too. And they said immediately, you look like a Short Fuse. And I'm like, what the hell?
What does that mean?
And I just realized, you know what? I am. I'm not going to lie.
Do you mean literally? Because I say this with all the love, but you're not like the tallest individual.
Oh.
Do they mean?
It's pretty funny. it's pretty funny. I am the smallest angry little person. It's always the little ones. It's mm-hmm. always the little ones. And that's basically what the show is, right? So it does talk a little bit of my borderline personality disorder, but it goes into a lot of my past. And it really is about family. In the end, it's about family. But you have to understand, this is the silliest show as well. I don't want – it's a very intense storytelling as well. Mm-hmm. But they're – are very funny stories in there, and I hope everybody goes see it. And it's very special to me.
Aww.
Very special to me. And I want people to relate to it that might not hear a story like this. Hmm. I would love more Asians to come to the show. And, you know, and I know there's going to be people who go, oh my gosh, that's our family. Or yeah. I live that life.
Yeah.
And they don't talk about their mental health. Cambodians don't talk about the past. And I don't know if you know a little bit about the history, a little sad history. And I just want to say Cambodia is thriving as hell right now. Okay? Okay. They're thriving. They're doing well. The younger people are talking about the past more.
Good.
And that I want to be clear that the reason why a lot of the stuff with my family and the relationship we've had with my dad and things like that is because bottles up things inside.
Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, so it's about losing control and, you know, but just making sure you cut the fuse, right? That's it.
No, I love that. It sounds like it's going to speak to a lot of different audiences and a lot of different topics that I think are really important that aren't spoken about nearly enough constantly, basically.
I'm sure that some people who listen to this show may not know. I mean, I don't want to insult the intelligence of our audience, but just for the sake of like trying to outline it, what is intergenerational trauma? And also like maybe how does it relate to you and your family?
You know, I am still learning, right? Mm. I'm still reflecting. I'm still learning about what my parents went through.
Mm-hmm.
And I know a lot of that has been passed down.
Yeah.
To me, I know a lot of that. I mean, a lot of that trauma that I have has come from, especially my dad. I just also, I'm learning a little bit more about it and to see what they went through, because I want to know exactly who to blame. in this whole thing, I got to point the finger. But I mean, that's what I know. And I know my dad has gone through so much in his life that he couldn't lose control in some situations. And that trauma has passed on to, you know, the kids, and also how he's also kind of treated the kids and us a bit. He's great. I just want to tell everybody that I love my family very much. And I love my dad very much, you know.
If you didn't, you wouldn't do a whole show around your family.
Of course, of course. But it's a very... It's emotional.
Yeah,
I'm not gonna lie. It's emotional when you're talking about what they've gone through.
Yeah,
because you're starting to understand what you've gone through with them a little bit more, and accepting of it, and understanding.
It gets into your bones. It gets into your body, and it gets into everything. Your parenting style, the way you interact with other people, the way you interact with yourself, the way that you understand yourself. Like, absolutely, that kind of trauma does dig in deep and, of course, continues until, you know, you're able to talk about it and break it down and all of those really, really, really hard things.
Yeah.
Amazing. I'm loving this conversation. We're going to go to a quick break, and when we come back, we'll have more questions for Molly. Molly, welcome back.
Thank you.
I want to know, have you always used humor as a way to help understand yourself and your mental health? Is that why you ended up in comedy? How does that happen?
I don't know. You just think you're a weird kid anyway, right? I always thought I was
exclusive to
comedians. I know. I used to try to make people laugh. I was always the funny girl, the funny friend.
Yeah.
But I would hang out with so many different people. It's also just how I grew up, you know? Mm-hmm. So I was exposed for a lot of different personalities, and I was always, so maybe I always had a different audience all the time.
Fair enough. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, I don't know. There was a little competition with me and my brother.
Okay.
So he got a lot of attention because he was a little cute kid and he was entertaining, and I was a little bit more quiet, but then grew into being, you know, I got a little louder, angrier.
Because I always look at comedy and especially stand-up comedy and think, oh my God, that looks so amazing. In a different life, I would have loved that career. But then the biggest part of it is just having to put yourself out there. And I know that I'm very open on the podcast and I write about all these things, but for me, there's a really distinct difference between doing that in the privacy of my own home and then sharing that when I don't need to see other people's reactions and getting up on stage and just sharing myself and physically having to see people engage, like doing my job in front of people. I don't think my mental health could survive that.
Girl. Listen, I still don't know what I'm doing, and I've been doing it for 16 years, not consecutive. Well, not, I wouldn't count pandemic, but I don't count the first year either. I don't, maybe not. So I still don't know what I'm doing. And if I am not nervous before I get on a stage, any stage, I don't care what it is, if I don't have the shakes and I don't have my nervous poo, I'm sorry, that's a little too TMI, but I do have one usually before I go on stage, seriously. And
that makes me so happy. Thank you for sharing.
Then that means I'll be okay. I just got to get that first thing in, the first funny thing. It could be the first 15 seconds or the weirdest thing I say, and I get a laugh. It changes my energy.
How are you able to memorize all of your material and deliver it in a way that's like...
I'm sorry, I did that like fake laugh because... We don't always remember the material. And that was a prime example of my first show last night.
Okay.
It was the first show, and there was a lot of things I did not remember. And it's sad because it's my story, but it's very scripted as well. And I don't want to blame this on jet lag and being tired and being old and doing something every day since I've been here in Melbourne for a week now, but it did have a lot to do with it. And it was a bumpy show, I'm not gonna lie, you know. I'm not gonna lie, but I had an audience there to be entertained, and it was a good first run of the show, you know. It's almost like that test run, right? It's that, hey, it's a debut. I've only done this show twice, and it was in the States.
Wow. Okay.
That is
so
fresh.
It's fresh material.
Fresh. Yes.
Cool.
But it was maybe 2 weeks ago where I did the show back to back. So, and it was a much smoother run. I was a lot more prepared. I think I'm being here in Melbourne, very overwhelming. Very overwhelming seeing all the comics, you know. I know some comics from New Zealand that are here. I have friends flying from Wellington to come see the show. So it's very nice. It's like my heart is like wants to explode, but also like I need to give them the best show ever. You know, they flew to come see me. So
much excitement, but also so much pressure, and you don't want to disappoint. Nerve-wracking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, people are supporting it, and I love that.
Excellent.
How do you tackle imposter syndrome? Because I assume everyone feels it. I'm starting to learn that everyone does. And, you know, you mentioning, you know, you want to put on the best show for the people who've traveled and things like that. But how do you manage getting up there if you feel, oh, what am I doing?
Yeah. Well, I've already had one meltdown and I've cried 4 times this week. So not bad.
Less than one a day.
So not bad. I was pretty happy about that. am I really over it? No, but I have a very good support system here. I have really great friends that are not even here and that I talk to back at home to just, you know, just let me know that I'm great, I'm amazing, they, you know, and all this stuff, and you're going to be fine. It's only going to get better. And yeah, I just have to keep telling myself that I made it this far.
Absolutely.
And you forget all the things that you've done before, all the great things you've done. I'm like, what? How did you forget that you did all these amazing things?
It's again, that part of that self-sabotage thing, you know, like you're wearing blinders as to your trajectory in life. Because I know quite intimately, and Jacinta could probably attest to this, but I'm very liable to look at how things are in the present as pretty shit, and that I'm not, you know, doing a lot of good things with my life and all that kind of stuff. And then I need to be reminded by other people that I'm doing a podcast, for example, or I have done all of these things that have been helpful, because it's that self-sabotaging thing. It's like, no, you're not actually, I don't want to use the term you're not worth it, because that's very maudlin and depressing and stuff, but you're not doing as much as you should be or could be or whatever. You're not living to your potential. And I think there's probably something in like societal in that as well, that we have the expectation to be always working towards some sort of enlightened end point.
Yes. Agreed.
Even if it's not some enlightened end point, I think, you know, it's no secret that we have some social critique, but you know, the productivity mindset and things like that, if you've always got to be doing something, and the creative ventures and the storytelling that we want to do. We were speaking about it earlier, where Molly has always worked full time while she's been doing comedy, because you simply cannot sustain yourself on comedy, especially when you're building that career and getting into it. You know, there's no one out there being like, here, let me give you a year's wage for you to develop a show and get ready and stuff like that. And I think, you know, it's really common for everyone in creative fields to have that issue where there's so much productivity and wealth focus, and when what you do isn't something that makes big bucks, unless you're the biggest names in the world, it's very hard to value yourself and your work.
You're so there's so many layers to this, right? Is that it's also like that self-sabotaging. I have to get over that first. Like I have to tell myself I'm good enough. I can do this. And if I said I want to go full-time with comedy, I have to commit that I need to make money doing comedy, and I know the love of it is going to go away, and I'm going to hate it. Making it a business, making it your career. You're going to turn into your own producer, your marketer, your graphic designer, your directing, you know, you're pitching yourself. You're doing all the work.
Yeah.
Mm.
Unless I have money to actually put a team behind me, a manager, I don't.
Yeah.
No. And that stresses the hell out of me, you know? For this show here in Melbourne, I have a friend, one of my best friends, Annie, who's also American, but she lives here in Melbourne, right? She is like the best thing. She's my MVP.
Oh, my God. Annie is my next door neighbor for listeners. We love her.
Oh, MVP. Holy shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. For the last week, Molly has been walking past my house and I had no idea there was someone new here. How observant I am.
Yeah, she's amazing, and she's gotten my brain kind of settled and focused, and she actually was my voice for a lot of days. I said, Annie, can you speak for me, please? I don't know how to do anything right now, like nothing. My brain just shut down, and she's taking care of me.
It's virtually impossible to do things without an Annie in creative fields, and if you can't pay one, and if you don't have a gorgeous friend who can do it for chunks of time, you can't do it all by yourself. It's just insane that, you know, you have to, when you're building and before you can get the whole team, that you have to be your own marketer and your own producer, your own manager and your own pitcher and all of that.
Website designer. Like, that's what I do.
That's why our website is disgusting, because I did it.
Our website's good. What are you talking about?
It's nice. Anyone wants to reach out and volunteer to do up our website, hit me up because.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I might have the time because I do graphic design. So I did Molly, create my own flyer.
What
for the
don't
show.
You do? Literally, what don't you? I don't. Do you have extra?
Stay calm is what I don't do.
You have extra hours in the day? Do you not sleep? Do you not get
I don't,
tired?
I cannot relax. I don't think. I went to the hot springs a few days ago.
Mm-hmm.
And even there, I'm still thinking about the show. I'm literally in hot water relaxing my muscles. And I'm just like, the show. No one's going to come. You know, it's just, but.
That makes a lot of sense. Yeah.
But also, I know a lot of people might, you know, turn to medication, you know, even that if that was recreational medication.
Yeah.
It's not that it doesn't do it for me. I just can't function.
Yeah.
That my brain is racing, but if you shut me down, my whole body shuts down and I can't work and I can't do anything. And that's not what I need to do here. I need to be very focused on this.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that wouldn't be fulfilling either. You know, just if you can't, like, I imagine that you get a lot of, you look like you love doing what you do and, you know, having all those things that I can imagine that being shut down, even if it calms your mind, probably not the way you'd want to do things.
Yeah, no, this is not for me. But I mean, not that I'm against it completely, you guys. I'm just saying. So if you know somebody,
well,
you have a couple off nights, okay?
I'm on medication for bipolar disorder and like depression stuff. So I'm on lithium, and lithium was great to begin with because I was very elevated. But in a really uncomfortable way, because a lot of time people, when they get elevated, get really amazing ideas and bursts of energy. For me, it felt like I was having all of these wild ideas, but I was trapped in this person-shaped box and I couldn't get out. So the lithium helped me come down from that and realize you're a person, you're a human being with limits. But now, after I've been on it for like probably 8 years, actually, I'm starting to feel as though it's like walking through molasses. It's like this brain fog kind of thing where ideas just aren't really sticking or my memory's not so good. So I definitely get the wariness around some of these medications for sure, because it's so experimental, really. And it can change for a person over time.
I don't want to compare like medication and stuff, but I got off mine. And I just felt like I think I'll be okay, you know. Like I don't think, and also it was just doing stuff to my gut that I don't like, and I just didn't. And I was like, I don't need to be constipated all the time. And I just like
how
it's
will
so
you do your nervous poo. If
I know,
constipated?
I know.
It throws your whole show off.
And now I'm back. Oh God, I can't even imagine. That is just awful. But I know that I've lost a little bit of that focus and concentration that it normally would give me. It gives me a little bit of, you know, a little bit of energy that I need. And I know that's why my brain is a little all over the place for something like this. And yeah. And I did register for this festival. Like I call it a little kind of a manic type of episode type of thing. I don't know if that's what you would call, but in my head, I'm like, oh my God, I'm the best. I'm going to do all of this right now. And I'm going to get in this festival. And
that
I
checks out for what Lachlan said in the past. Yeah.
I literally registered for this festival. This is terrible to say, but a lot of people, I'm not going to lie, people have done this festival like in 4 weeks. Like seriously, they don't got a show together. They did everything in 4 weeks. But I registered for the festival late in December.
That's okay. Fine.
Yeah. Right?
That's ages ago.
Ages ago. But I bring my laptop with me. I have a little out, you know, I took a little trip to Santa Cruz away from my house and be like, I'm going to get away. And then I see an email pop up saying it's still too, you know, still not too late to register. And I've always wanted to do the Melbourne Festival. And I said, I'm going to do it. And I was like, what is telling me to do this right now? And then I did it. I signed up and I literally, I worked with a fellow comic here, he lives in Melbourne, who helped me get a venue, talk to his friend who works for Grace Darling and all that stuff. And I got a venue, I got registration in, I got a team, I did artist passes, I did the show, I designed my poster, I designed the
flyer. I sent out stuff. And I did it in one night. And then I literally, the next day, I was like, oh, I'm in a festival now.
I just looked at the date and I was like, oh, yeah, that's pretty good. She got all that done in 4 months. Nice, good one. And you're like, I did that in one night. What?
Well, I did the poster stuff literally the day after. But
oh my God.
I got it all done because in my head I kind of already knew. Of course, yeah. I made that. Of course, everything wasn't set in stone. I still had to do contracts, yes, money, still, all that stuff. But it was literally in maybe two weeks where I completed everything for this festival, like maybe except for media releases, which was a little late.
That's insane. But then
I said, oh, yeah, exactly.
Where's the line? This is interesting because where's the line between saying, wow, that's such a great, how good on you, Biff, for being so driven and getting this all done in one night, and then saying, oh, that's a bit much.
And honestly, I was like, I'm not on anything. This is just my brain going, wow, I can do this. I'm going to do it. My impulsive behavior. Mm-hmm. My impulsive, I got a flight on sale New Year's Day to Melbourne and New Zealand. I was like, I'm flying. I'm doing it.
That's
got
absolutely
the ticket.
What I'm doing on New Year's Day. I'm just checking out for cheap flights. You know, I'm just hanging around on Jetstar, just waiting for them flights to pop up because, you know, I got myself into a festival in a country I've
never been to Australia, Lachlan.
Oh, wow.
This is welcome. The first time. And
was there a come down from that? You mentioned that there was
definitely
a moment of, oh, shit, I'm in a festival. What's that like when you've had this brilliant moment and you've done the thing, you're registered, you're in, you sorted your poster, all of that, and now you're like, fuck, I'm in a festival.
I'm in a festival and I'm doing like 10 shows back to back. 50 minutes to an hour, it could be.
Oh my God.
At a haunted venue, I don't know. It's just, it's a lot. And the come down, that's where I get worried, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm freaking out. I'm crying. I'm going, what did I do? But then there's this excitement. I'm like, I know I can do it. This is not my first rodeo. I've done this. What am I so scared about? And if it fails, everybody tells you, if you think it failed, so what? Do it again. You're just working at it, right? But I'm like, I don't want it to.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't want it to. I want everything perfect. That first show.
Absolutely.
Yep.
Also,
because you worked so hard getting all the things. But then I said, did I work hard? I did everything in 2 weeks.
Hey, you worked hard in a concentrated time frame.
Yeah.
I thought we were going to say, everyone says, you know, if it doesn't work, I thought the end of that was going to be, just don't come back to Australia. For me, I'm like, it's perfect or you never return to that place.
Correct. All right, you'll never see me again.
I thought that's where that was going to go. But sure, that's probably healthier, the whole learn to improve, do more. Also, sorry, listeners, for serious. He's joining this episode.
Yes.
It is what it is. Sorry.
It's adorable.
But no, that is a nicer way to look at it than, and then you never go back. Because we would love to have you back. That's great.
Aww.
Please come back every year. You are part of the Melbourne International Comedy Festival every year now.
Honestly, the people are lovely here. And I want to see more of Australia. So I'll definitely come back.
Oh my God. Molly on tour. Molly on tour. Amazing.
All right. I can make it happen, especially in the middle of the night at 3 a.m.
I look forward to the emails announcing it at 4 a.m. when you're like, this is my poster. Let's roll.
I want to mention that I also do everything backwards too, you guys. Like I think I had a design poster before I even had the content, what the show was about. You know, like I said, I know what this kind of is going to be about. And then I go, this is exactly what it's going to be about after what I see visually.
How do you pick a title if you don't know what it's about?
No, now I know about what it's about, but it gets deeper into what it's really going to be about. Hmm. So I know I have problems with anger management issues.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Oh, wow. I just got diagnosed with BPD last year.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. I've had all this stuff happen to me in the past that a lot of traumatic experiences. I know all that's going to happen, but it's like doing the poster first before you have your description for the show is what I'm talking about. Is kind of
it's a bold choice.
Yeah. And I usually do tend to do that.
I have the design of the poster before I have, like, if I produce a show, before I book the comics, you know, like, it's one of those things. But but those are things that people do afterwards, right? Yeah. They do something half-assed, whereas I'm like, I need it to look
exactly. No, I can relate to that, though. In terms of writing, I always thought I was going to be, like, a really hardcore plotter and I was going to know exactly where I was going. And for the manuscript I'm currently working on, I wrote, like, the climax, like, the big ultimate fight scene first. So I'd technically written an opening years and years before for a uni assignment, and it was terrible, and I'd left it, and then it simmered for a couple of years, and then I was like, that's the middle scene, that's the big thing, and then have worked and written scenes just as they pop in. So I can understand if not working from start to finish. You just jump in on what's there and then build.
Exactly. Right then, I already knew the title of the show in my head. I was like, Short Fuse, exactly. Mm-hmm. I just want everybody to know that I am 4'10", by the way. I am a shorty, and some people are more surprised how short I am when I get off stage because I guess I'm very loud and bold. I'm a bold little one, right? I got big personnel energy on stage. Mm-hmm. Big also, energy. The stage
adds at least a meter to your height.
Literally centimeters. I'm not on that high of a stage. It's a very low ceiling in my venue. I feel like a giant. And then I get out into the real world out there in the, at the bar area, and then everybody is towering over me. And forget about it. It's like, some of these places I've gone to, I'm like, can I even breathe? Do I need a snorkel in here right now? Just like, they can hear me. Everybody can hear me. I'm American. Of course they can hear me. It's like, where is that sound and voice coming from? It's so
that is amazing. So to wrap it all up, I'm going to put you on the spot. And it is an awful question. Why should people come and see your show?
My show is just fucking stupid. Okay. It's stupid. There's a lot of stupidity in it. There is a lot of serious moments. There's a lot of intense moments, and it's fun and it's different. And if you love storytelling and if you love real stories and raw, authentic stories, you better come to my show because I'm going to take you on a ride and I'm going to take you on an emotional journey just like myself. Right. So
that was a fucking great pitch.
I sold it. Yeah.
So good. Amazing. It is so good. before I let you go, I do actually have one more question as well. Are there any other shows that you recommend for the festival that people should go and see after they see yours, obviously?
Oh, my goodness. You know, I've talked to a few people that I want to see shows coming up as soon as I get mine in the – you know, a few. There's a Maddie Weeks. I think it's Never Gonna Die. Mm-hmm. And there's a comic I met named Marcel. Seems lovely. And his show is Let Me Eat Cake.
Amazing. Excellent.
Right? And it's just, they're just silly, silly shows. I do want to see Abby Howells. Mm-hmm. Abby Howells, she's from New Zealand. And I'm a big fan of the Uso Funny Show was amazing at Grace Darling. It's a 4 o'clock show. We got a Pacifica lineup and it's great. It's great.
Oh, amazing. Check it out. All brilliant recommendations. Wonderful. For listeners who want to find you when you leave our beautiful shores, are you on Instagram? Are you on Facebook? Or are you on the Twits and such things?
You guys got to stop making abbreviations for everything. Twits.
That's a distinctly Jacinta thing, though, I think.
Yeah, I'm on Instagram. It's M Sokom. M for Molly, right? Sokom, S-O-K-H-O-M. Follow me there, and you can find me on Facebook as well, Molly Sokom.
Amazing. Yeah. And we'll put all of those in the show notes anyway, so that you can go first book Molly's tickets, your tickets for Molly's show, and then go book all the others and then follow her. And we're also on Instagram. We have a special Facebook community. Come and join us. I am pretty shit at it, and I have betrayed you all and made promises I can't keep again and did not post them there. But I love you, and the more of you that join, the more often I get notifications and see it, the more likely it is that I will get back on.
Is this blackmail, Jacinta? Are you blackmailing your audience?
You blackmail our audience all the time. I just give them a little, like, positive reinforcement.
This will nudge you out of the door, yes.
Exactly. we'll see you guys again in
you guys were so fun, by the way. This this was so fun. Look, thank you for having
we
me.
We don't have
thank you, Molly.
Compliments and hyping, but we'll take it.
Absolutely. Yes. Definitely.
Take it. Take it.
We'll see you guys in a week.
Catches. Bye.
Differently Brained shares the opinions of individuals and does not consider your personal circumstances. Differently Brained exists purely for information purposes and should not be relied on as health or medical advice. Because no brain is the same, please consult your healthcare professional for your personal medical needs.